there ain't anything better, just like every other guy, than to actually see your own kids play in sports. So that's where you got to be yesterday. How did it go on the golf course?
Yesterday was junior golf. It was great for about three holes until the skies opened up.
Oh, yeah.
Then there's no worse place for a child to be than on a golf course, because they don't want to be there. Because they're getting soaking wet. You know how that goes. But it was fun. Good time. You can't beat that. You remember you were a kid out playing golf when you were a kid, or doing whatever, swimming in the pool. Not a care in the world. There's no bills to pay when you're that age. You're just waiting to get done to get a snack. Remember them days?
Those were good days, Don.
Oh, man, those were the days. You didn't have to worry about putting gas in the car, none of that stuff. There was no insurance to pay. Oh, those were the days.
So how'd the son do?
He did okay.
Sorry.
Where's
the guy about the son hitting balls right now?
Hey, he didn't hit anybody, so that's a good thing.
That's
a
good start.
Those junior tournaments, you see a lot of the woods.
Wait a minute. Junior golf? How about the celebrity events you go and cover? Same thing. If you're Charles Barkley or a junior golfer, not hitting anybody does constitute a good day.
No, there's not a big difference. So then today I get the inflatable birthday party with 23 10-year-old girls, which is just on the cusp of utter life insanity in, what, about another 2 or 3 years?
Yes.
10-year-old is still the safe zone with girls. Give it a couple of more years, and there ain't going to be 23 together. At least not with me in that room.
No. No.
Crazy.
No. Not at all.
I swear, women and, you know, the moms that bring the kids to these parties, they have an inherent gene that men do not have. I don't know how they do it. I really don't.
See, look, and I appreciate the fact you'd come on when you got the party taking place and all. It's not because of the kids. When you drop the fact that the moms were there, look, Don, I'm just going to be honest with you. I figured you're going to be hanging out in there, working the room.
Well, there's a lot of mama drama these days, you know. It's just crazy. I was the only guy among like 30 females.
My point, granted, exactly,
23
Don.
23 of them are 10 years old, so that helps.
Okay.
The mama drama's just crazy. I don't get it. I just don't get it.
Almost as crazy?
You know the whole Mars and Venus thing? It's true. It's really true. It's alive and well.
Our weekly discussion on life lessons with Don Hawes here on Tide 99.1. The SEC Media Days wrapped up last week. They basically continued, and I talked with Kevin about this a little bit in the last hour, but from the SEC's perspective, don't you just love how they hijack everybody else? I mean, it's one thing to own ESPN Monday through Thursday of last week, but then the other leagues are going, all right, finally, it's our time. We get to be in front of everybody. And what does the SEC do? They set up the car wash on Monday and Tuesdays in Bristol, and hardly anybody's paying any attention to what's going on in the ACC or the Big 12 media events.
I even asked Mike Slive about that because, you know, they pushed it up this year a week. Usually it's in the mid-20s a week. Now it's, what, the 14th, I think, it started this year of July. So I asked him that, and he said, you know, we like to be first, but most importantly, we don't like to have to react to anybody. Which, you think about it, it makes a lot of sense. He doesn't want to have to be at his media days reacting to what somebody just said a week ago. So that's pretty smart business, I think, by Mike Slive and the SEC, don't you think?
Totally agree.
Yeah, that's a smart move on their part.
All right, the storylines, though, that we're playing out of, Spurrier and Saban don't like each other. Spurrier's taking shots at Saban. Then we go to Bob Stoops taking shots at Saban. And the SEC. You remember the days when Saban was just considered the mean bad guy, and now everybody's taking pot shots at him, supposedly?
Yeah, well, you know what? Like they say, at least they're talking about you. When they're not talking about you is when I think you need to be a little nervous, because that means you're not doing something right. But they just keep poking the bear And I think they're enjoying the fact that Bama's coming off this two-game losing streak, that there's all kinds of question marks in Tuscaloosa. But, you know, I remember the last time Bama was coming off a, I believe it was a 10-3 season. And then they, if I'm not mistaken, went on to win two straight national championships. So I think, you know, have fun while you have it. And again, I'm not rooting for one team or the other, but I'm just thinking, you just see that mindset with Saban and the players, and I'm sure we're going to see even more when practice starts here in a couple of weeks. They just got that determination, like, you know, this two-game losing streak is not sitting well. Like Saban said on ESPN the other day, the players are utterly embarrassed about the way the season ended last year, and they want to get it right.
Are you saying Jim Croce had it right 30, 35, 40 years ago, whatever it was? You don't tug on Superman's cape. You don't spit in the wind. You don't pull the mask off the old yeah. Ranger, and you don't
too much,
tick off an Alabama team that dropped two straight.
Too much talent has been recruited. Now, we may not know all the players' names just yet, but there's just way too many five-star guys rolling into that town every February for them not to get back. And the schedule sets up kind of nice for them this year. I think Alabama is going to be right back where they were. I don't think it's going to take long to get rid of this two-game losing streak.
Don Hawes, Alabama's 13th sports director, joining us here on Tide 99.1. You see him at 5, 6, 6:30, and 10 o'clock on the NBC affiliate in Birmingham. The quarterback position, much discussed and will continue to be, but the Jake Coker deal of first being on the Maxwell Award watch list, now one of 27 names on the Johnny Unitas Award watch list. Your thoughts on that taking place this week?
I do not remember a player, and I'm curious to see if you have. I do not remember a player ever being on Player of the Year Award watch list without ever having played a down or taken a snap for the team that they're on that list for. Do you? And I've covered Michigan, I've covered Notre Dame, I've covered Bama and Auburn. I don't ever remember that happening with a player who literally has not played for that school has been on all these award watch lists. It's very odd.
Here's the part that kind of, you know, you go back, you would think maybe Cam Newton, because what he had done in junior college and frankly on the field had been seen about as much as Jake Coker was at Florida State. I know their arrival at their campuses came in different ways.
Yeah.
But that's to your point of how rare this is. To me, it's the other side of it, though. While I think Coker's a good quarterback, Don, I just don't think there's much star power at the position. I mean, Nick Marshall was a really good athlete and obviously within that system did a tremendous job. I guess because we've gotten so pass happy with everything and that's not his strength. When I think quarterback, Nick Marshall doesn't come to my mind first
no.
and foremost.
And you know what? That's one thing that was very noticeable at Media Days last week, because last year you had everybody. You had Johnny Manziel, you had McCarron, you had Aaron Murray, you had Mettenberger, you had all these guys, or Zach Mettenberger. This year, you know, you mentioned Nick Marshall, and people know him because of the way Auburn finished that season last year, and they went to the bright lights of the BCS championship game. But outside of the SEC, there is no way in the world, and I can say this without hesitation, there is no way in the world anybody outside of the SEC knows who Bull Wallace is, who knows who Dak Prescott is, who knows about Matty Mock. There's just no way.
Yeah.
And those are about the only known quarterbacks in the SEC outside of Nick Marshall right now. Hudson Mason, nobody knows who Hudson Mason is yet. I'm not saying they're not going to know in a couple of months, but
right.
Nobody knows who Hudson Mason is yet at Georgia. So it's definitely this is an odd year. Now there's a lot of stud running backs in the SEC right now, but even that's not a huge number right now. Alabama's really, really loaded, but outside of that, there's not a name, a lot of names that just fly off the sheet like they have over the last 5 years in the SEC. A
couple articles out, people saying that if Nick Marshall is suspended for the first game against Arkansas, Auburn's advantage, according to Vegas, won't change more than a field goal. They're about a 3-touchdown favorite. Kind of back to a similar either-or type of deal. Is that praise for the backup that Auburn has in place, or is it simply an indication that nobody has any respect yet for Arkansas?
I think it's probably the fact that nobody has a lot of respect for Arkansas, but I think in reality it should be the fact that Jeremy Johnson is that good as a backup quarterback. He got a lot of playing time last year at Auburn, and he's to me is a hidden gem, a hidden diamond. If anybody's close to Cam Newton, I think it's Jeremy Johnson. That guy is, first of all, huge. 6'6", 245, something like that. He's a big kid. But he has got a lot of experience that people don't normally think that he has right now. And if Nick Marshall went out of that game or got suspended for a half, a quarter, whatever Malzahn's going to do, I don't think Auburn loses a beat. Mainly, well, for two reasons. Mainly because, A, Jeremy Johnson is that good, I believe. But, B, they're going to have 6 weeks to get this kid ready for that particular game. And I don't think he needs 6 weeks. I think he's ready to go now. I think if Nick Marshall, for some reason, for whatever reason, became ineligible today, I don't think Auburn would miss much. They'd miss a little because Nick Marshall's got that speed factor to him. But I think Jeremy Johnson is one of the hidden gems of the SEC that we're going to be hearing a lot about, especially when Marshall leaves after this year and Johnson's the quarterback next year. He's really, really good.
Don, wasn't there a lot of debate going into the final month of the regular season as to whether or not he should be the guy over Nick Marshall?
Yep, as a true freshman, remember? A true freshman.
I mean, not at the start of the year. I mean with a month to go in the regular season.
Mm-hmm. Not unlike what Florida State went through with Coker and Jameis Winston. And all of a sudden Winston was named the starter and just took it from there, just like Nick Marshall was the starter and took it from there. But Jeremy Johnson started a couple of games last year. So I'm telling you, this kid is, I've seen him in practice. I've seen him play in games. He is that good. And honestly, if I'm Gus Malzahn, I don't hesitate to suspend Nick Marshall for the opener, because that really lays down the law to the rest of your team. Now, granted, it's basically a misdemeanor thing that he did. It's not a big deal. So I think, you know, maybe he gets a half suspension for that opener against Arkansas, but I don't think they'll miss a beat with Jeremy Johnson. I really don't.
Would you be surprised if he did suspend him, though, just because of what you said? And from a legal standpoint, you know, people have got their different opinions on whether or not, you know, what the law should be, but based on the fact of what the law is and the fact he wasn't even arrested, just cited.
I would be more surprised if he wasn't suspended than if he was. Because, granted, it was a minor offense, but it's the starting quarterback of your football team. You're not talking about the starting safety. You're not talking about an offensive lineman. And if you look back at Gus Malzahn's punishments, he lays down the law pretty strict. And I think the fact that it is your starting quarterback, you got to take that into account. He's the leader of the football team. He's the one that everybody's looking to. If you let that guy go in a car and get pulled over, and he's got marijuana in the car, and you just slap him on the wrist, I think that opens up a lot of trouble. And I just don't think Gus Malzahn's the type of guy that's going to let that happen. So I think he's going to get at least suspended for the first half of the game. I would be surprised if it was something lighter than that. But that's just my opinion.
Last thing, we'll let you go. We're talking to Don Haws from Alabama's 13. Got Kevin to chime in on this. Brian Mackin was on with Baron Huber this morning and talked about a piece of conversation. It's been out there for about a week or so since June Jones said, you know what, maybe if we're not in the Big Five conferences, we ought to go the old USFL route, go to the spring. I know the logistics of that could be very tough. Does that help UAB, Troy, Southern Miss, SMU? Does it help them ultimately, or does that send too bad of a signal for their overall athletic programs to give up the fight in the fall?
Well, I think it also hurts the NCAA, because I think then if you're the NCAA, you're just saying, hey, these schools really don't matter. These are the five power conferences that really matter. You know, the Conference USA, the other schools, they don't really matter, but, you know, we got to play them in it. So I think that would set a bad precedent to the NCAA. If you're those programs, the UABs of the world, I don't think you want to go that route either. I think the fans are so conditioned. When this time of year rolls around, when August and September roll around, it is football season. It's not something that you do in the springtime. I just think everybody is so conditioned to football in the fall. I think, you know, I was never a big fan of the USFL, and they had some pretty good players in the USFL back in the day, if you remember.
I remember it vividly.
I just do not think that would ever work. Do you think that would work?
I think it would be extremely tough. I think it's...
It might work for a first year as a novelty, you know, a novelty thing. Like, hey, look, they're playing in the spring. But by the time year two rolls around, I think that might fall the way of MLS soccer. You get your niche audience, but beyond that, to appeal to the broad base, I just don't know if that would work.
Here's where it'd work, is if ESPN decided to write the check for it. But I don't know that they feel like they need to. I think they feel like they've got everything just about that they truly need right now. Once they ultimately launch an ACC network, which I think will take place next, I think they feel like they have just about all that they need to get that done. You know, the USFL, we're getting off into another deal. If ESPN had known what they were truly going to become, the USFL could have made it. Because if you recall, that's who they didn't have the NFL back then. They were on the outside looking in of the National Football League.
Right.
I think they did start televising the draft, but that was the only real in they had. And if everybody had known what they would become and are today, I think the USFL would be on par or maybe better than the NFL simply because of the money that ESPN would own it entirely.
Hey, when
that's
I was living up in Michigan when that league sprouted, and we had a team called the Michigan Panthers that was in the USFL.
You had Bobby Hebert as your quarterback. You played
Bobby
the Stallions in the first game ever. I remember.
Came up there with that Cajun accent in Michigan. They're like, "What is this guy saying?" but they won a championship, you know. And that Anthony Carter, the receiver,
he did.
He was their big receiver out of Michigan. They had a decent team, and that's what. Remember, Jim Mora was coaching the team out of Baltimore. They were always really good. So that was a league that Jim Kelly was with. Was he with New Jersey with Herschel Walker?
He was
Walker
with
and all those
originally
guys?
The Houston Gamblers with Jack Pardee as his coach.
That's right.
He then went to the New York New Jersey Generals.
Right.
And.
They had Herschel Walker.
Herschel in the backfield. They had signed Doug Flutie as well.
Yeah.
I mean, there were great players in the league. I talked to one of them the other day, Cliff Stout, who was the Stallions quarterback, had replaced Bradshaw up in Pittsburgh. And he had Joe Cribbs. He had Jim Smith, who was the number three receiver on those great Steelers teams.
And if I remember
they
correct,
had some
wasn't
great
Reggie
players,
White with
great
the Memphis
coaches.
Team?
They just, Donald Trump messed everything up because he tried to jump it too quick. But I think there is I think with ESPN behind it, there was or is a place for spring football, but they've got so much content now, Don, I think they can do it without live games. I think they feel like less expensively they can rerun games that they own from the fall, do programming talking about how great the next season is going to be, do the car wash stuff like they have done over the course of this entire week after doing media days in Birmingham the week before, and they go, you know what, we own all that we really need to own right now.
Yeah, I agree, and I just don't know if school presidents and ADs could ever sell that to their fan base. I just don't know if anybody would let that slide. But stranger
it would be
things
very
happen,
tough.
Right?
very tough on the end of basketball season, and yep. and it would hurt those schools, I think, with baseball as well.
I agree.
Hey, always love talking to you. We'll let you get back to the house full of females, and good luck with your battle there.
I'm just diving back into the estrogen pool.
You're a good man, Don Halls.
Wish me luck, my friend.